And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Now, Dave, I want to throw a curveball at you here, and I want to read you something, because what I want to talk about is politics, the nature of politics. What's it all about? Listen to this. See if you agree with this. All experience has shown that people are more disposed to suffer while evils that they're suffering from are still bearable than to right them, to right their condition by abolishing those evils, abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. In other words, they'll put up with it. You think that's true?
Well, Thomas Jefferson thought it was true. He wrote that.
He wrote that. Not exactly in the words that I said it, but right?
Yeah, pretty much.
What he wrote was, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed.
Yeah.
That's the Declaration of Independence, the first paragraph.
Yeah, after the one, of course, of human events.
Yeah.
Right. This is the justification paragraph.
Yeah.
You know, this I would file under the idea of political inertia. You know, the scientific laws of inertia are things in motion tend to stay in motion unless, and things at rest tend to stay at rest unless acted upon by an outside force.
Correct.
And this is the at rest part of it. People tend to stay where they are unless they, shall we use the word, are sufficiently motivated to use force. What, you know, I'm not.
Well, you're making two points there. You're making two points. One is that the mass of people are inert until an outside force moves them, convinces them to do something. It doesn't arise from within the normal day-to-day activities of people.
Right. They're too busy with their ordinary lives.
They're too busy with their ordinary, they're coping with the problem that
affects.
Yeah, exactly. So without an outside force, the despised outside agitator, remember that outside agitator that in the civil rights movement?
The South, it was always an outside agitator.
Always an outside, but
the blacks were satisfied down South. It was some agitator that came down and made them dissatisfied.
Yeah, but the truth is, it's true. Some outside agitator. It doesn't have to come from outside. It can come from inside. But it has to be a group forms itself apart from the mass and says to the mass, we could change this.
Well, you know, now you're getting back into Falk rules. Rule number one is that ideas matter. And you have the outside force or person has to have some idea that's going to inspire or motivate people.
That's right.
And then you got into number three, you got to, you know, the communication of that and the repetition, because it takes a while for these things to sink in. Very few people will accept an idea, you know, have that aha moment the first time they hear something.
And it goes beyond that, because people have fear that if they do something, after all, there is somebody, some group of somebodies is benefiting from the suffering that they're undergoing. And those people have power. And to stop them from exerting that power, you undergo danger. You have to be willing to undergo that danger to you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, change always creates an unknown, and the unknown is scary. People are afraid of that. And the whole question is, and it goes back to like with the mine owners and whatever, is are we more afraid, do we become more afraid of staying where we are than of making a change that might benefit us? And it might not, you know, and that's, of course, that's what the mine owners would convince people, and the racists down South would say, hey, if you want to change, things could get worse for you.
That's right. But, right. And that's the line that the powers that be always use. Don't do this. It'll get worse for you. These people are trying. These outside agitators are using you for their own benefit. For what benefit? Why does it benefit the outside agitator that everybody should be able to be free and equal? How does
the
it
devil we know is better than the devil we don't?
Yeah, that's right. And even if the devil that we don't know isn't the devil.
Right.
I mean, when Jesus appeared, he was regarded as the devil, right?
Yeah, he was the outside agitator.
He was the outside agitator, precisely.
Against the forces of the powers that be.
That's right. But the form of our politics is not what we're talking about. The form of our politics is like selling cornflakes or Coca-Cola. You go to the prejudices, the existing ideas, the existing prejudices, the existing fears of the people, and you say to them, I'll give you what you want. But the whole point is the people, what they need, it may not be what they want. In fact, it isn't necessarily what they want. Because if they wanted it, then they would have already been awakened and they'd be organized. It's if you say, I'll give you what you want, and you don't say, I'll help you realize what you need, you've already given away the game. You're giving in to the existing evil that is. You're helping make the evil that is bearable, continue to be bearable, instead of saving, why do we have to put up with this evil? Why do we need evil for? The reason I make this point is because the current electoral campaign is characterized by Trump leading a movement against everybody else who's not leading a movement. And Trump saying to people, I can, you know, you don't realize it. I can get you out of your problem, whatever that problem is. I can get you out of that problem.
It's a Rorschach test. I can solve your problem, but he never, you know, but everybody has a different idea what their problem is. They just have to buy into the idea that he's their solution.
And that's the role of the demagogue. He is the great demagogue.
Only I can fix it.
I am your retribution, right? Could there be a more perfect statement? I am your retribution. But the people don't need him to be their retribution. The people need themselves to be their retribution. People have to have their own power, not because if Trump is your retribution, then Trump can be your oppressor.
Yeah. Well, we had an outside force a number of years ago. Obama worked that, but he didn't. You know, his thing was hope, not retribution.
And people wanted to belong to a movement based on hope. That's why he got all that support.
Yeah, in some ways there were two different sides of the same coin, and now America has been engaged in a coin flip, and they've turned to the, I guess you'd call it, tails side.
Yeah, but you know, Obama didn't follow through. Once he got elected, that was the end of the movement.
Right, and we've talked ad nauseum about that. You know, the power of Howard Dean in the 50 state movement. We fight everywhere. I noted to you this week that there's a movement among the Democrats to reassert themselves in rural areas, places like where you live. That was the Fetterman theory that came along.
That's right.
And what they have to do is come to a realization, you know, the political gurus or whoever you want to talk about it say, well, we want to win, and we can't win there, so we write it off. And what the Fetterman type theory is you can't expect to win. Don't expect to win there. Don't expect to win, or at least don't expect to win right away. But what you can do is you can make inroads, and like he did in every county in Pennsylvania, and you start shaving your losing margin by 2 and 3%, maybe 5% everywhere. That adds up. That adds up. Now, you can't ignore the places where you're going to score big, the big cities. But if you can start to turn the tide, it has a benefit. It has a political benefit to it.
In military strategy, there's an approach called indirect warfare, and indirect warfare is fighting on the flanks, knocking off the logistics,
right?
Not direct head on to the middle of the enemy's fighting
sure.
line,
right?
And in general, indirect warfare works. It takes longer, but it works. Because you don't have if you're the other side, you're starting out, you're weaker. That's by definition, you're weaker. The other guys are stronger. That's why he's in a dominant position. You can't go head-to-head against him. You don't have enough heads. You don't have enough guns. You don't have enough everything. But you might be able to mobilize five people to attack one, get rid of that one, and you do that a lot. After a while, you'll be equal in forces. That is a very effective method, and that, in fact, is the method by which all guerrilla warfare works.
Well, you're back to rule number one, long-term.
Long-term is definitely necessary, right?
Yeah.
But also not imagining that you can appeal to the current prejudices of people, because the current prejudices of people are the ideas of their enemy. People accept the ideas of their enemy because their enemy dominates them. And to be dominated by someone means to accept his or her ideas. Otherwise, you're not dominated by them.
Yeah. Well, but the other thing is they put into people's minds that this is the enemy.
Yes.
Rather than themselves being the enemy or what they do. It's a distraction, but it's an effective distraction. Remember that Margaret Chase Smith said she didn't want her party to become the party of ignorance and bigotry, that kind of thing.
It was already the party of ignorance and bigotry.
But it's become even more so. We don't want to educate people because they might think that these things are wrong. I mean, look, we saw this last week, the education superintendent in Oklahoma getting out there. And over the last few years, we've learned a lot about that terrible riot, race riot in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they killed hundreds of people and drove out a very prosperous community.
Yeah, possibly the single most prosperous African-American community in the country at the time.
Right. And this superintendent comes out and says, well, this thing wasn't racial.
Wasn't racial, right, exactly.
And we can't teach that it's racial,
right?
Type of things. It was like the thing that came out a couple of weeks ago. We can't teach that, we can teach that Rosa Parks was a brave woman because she didn't want to give up her seat. But we can't teach that the reason she didn't want to give up, is that they were making her give up her seat was because she was black.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I mean, nothing could be a more clear explanation of how the ideas of the people who are oppressing other people are used. And once, if they infect your head with that idea, you'd never be able to resist racism.
Right. I mean,
you see no reason to, because you wouldn't think it existed. You wouldn't understand what was happening to you.
And I have to tell you, the new enemy, of course, is trans people.
Yes.
That's it.
Which is 1% of the population, maybe.
Probably far less than that.
Possibly far less than that, but it's not 1% with power. The 1% of our population that has power are the 1% that control the economy, which is not the trans population.
Yeah, the bankers and the...
The investors in general.
Investors.
That's right.
Investors.
Yeah.
America made a big change back in the late 70s, the 80s, where the financial sector was only a small part of the economy. And manufacturing was a large part. And now it's flipped. Biden's trying to flip that back, but it's going to take longer than any term of office that he has. But
how can manufacturing ever overcome the dominance of the investors? The manufacturers require the investors for the capital. This is a system that's dominated by the investment community. This is a financial system, not a manufacturing system. Manufacturing is what some people do, but they are dependent on the investors to do it. Capital formation is the key.
Well, yeah, but manufacturing is what creates wealth for the workers.
That's manufacturing where- creates the manufacturing is what the system has to do. Every system has to manufacture, right?
Well, we tried not. We tried to get rid of manufacturing, and we see what the.
Well, no, we didn't try to get rid of it. We only tried to get rid of it in certain parts of the world.
World, yeah.
Yeah, but manufacturing has to be done, or otherwise humanity dies.
Yeah.
But the point is, the power isn't held any longer. It's not the manufacturers who give the orders to the bankers. It's the bankers and the hedge funds that give orders to the manufacturers. That's where the power is. That's why it's so difficult for the Biden foreign policy to succeed, because he's got a situation where the Chinese hold several trillion dollars worth of American bonds. They've lent money to the American manufacturers, and the American manufacturers needed that money. Well, they can't really so simply do without.
You know, that's the thing, that the world is interdependent.
The system is interdependent. That's right.
But you know, the
autocracy went out. Economic independence, economic isolation. That's all well and good if you have a pre-industrial system.
Well, that's what Trump's been trying to sell. We're not interdependent. That we can do it, go it alone. That's what
Yeah, but he wasn't able to get to anywhere.
Of course not, but he was able to communicate in a way the people thought he was.
No, that's right, because that tied in with his whole approach, his movement-building approach. But in his policies, he didn't carry that out. His policies were just, we can have an interdependent economy. We just got to make sure that we dominate the interdependence. That was his policy. Bad deals. He wasn't against deals. He was against bad deals, right?
But he made a lot of bad deals himself.
Well, he's an incompetent.
That's true.
He's an incompetent. But his point, which was what Jared Kushner said when he tried to recruit Kasich to become his vice president.
Right.
Remember, Kasich said, "Well, why would I want to be the vice president? What will the president do?" He said, "Oh, the president will make America great again. You'll run the government."
Right.
He had a parliamentary vision. He probably didn't know that, but he was trying to replicate the French system, or in a certain respect, the British system, and that's what Trump does. Trump goes around building a movement. He doesn't administer the country. He doesn't know how to do that. But there isn't a counter movement. There's no political counter movement. You raised the question, have we had a situation where movements have campaigned against each other in the recent past? It's interesting. Have we? What do you think?
It's hard to come up with. You know, we said Trump is a movement. We've said Obama was a movement. Prior to that... I'm not really sure Clinton was a movement.
Clinton was no movement. A movement is the anti-war movement. A movement is the civil rights movement. That's a movement. A movement is the MAGA movement, where thousands of people gather, animated by some emotion and political vision, and support some structure.
Yeah. Reagan was a movement.
Was he?
I think so. I think for a long time, the worshiping of him by the Republicans until Trump came along was enormous. But now you hear them cite Ronald Reagan, and the Trumpers just brush it off. They don't want to hear that. I mean, they think Reagan was a traitor. You know, he gave amnesty to immigrants. On that, he made compromises with the Democrats, that kind of thing. And he was a
They have a different
movement.
They're
not interested in that.
Yeah, they have a different movement, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess George Wallace was a movement, but like
he was
said,
a real
was
movement.
Regional.
He was a real,
but it was regional.
He was regional. Well, I don't know. Look at Indiana. Didn't he win the primary in Indiana when he went up there? He had a pretty big movement in Ohio and Indiana, Southern Illinois. He was very powerful. That was a real. Mass movement, I think, but it didn't break out. in the same way that the Trump movement broke out.
No.
Trump was a more effective manipulator of racism because he didn't need segregation. He didn't need segregation. He didn't need to defend segregation. He could have and he did promote a racism that existed in your mind that didn't require and doesn't require actual implementation except against a bunch of foreigners in the southern border that you never see.
Well, he built on Wallace.
Oh, yeah. He inherited Wallace.
Yeah, he built on that. And he's still playing that card. Of course, he's got his other troubles. But in the meantime, the other thing that's happened, of course, was the attacks on the institutions. And, of course, in what we would start out with if we're talking about this stuff is that institutions helped preserve the status quo. They were institutions or anti-movement type of things.
Right.
Except that
The Mexicans said the contrary. You cannot have the Institutional Revolutionary Party.
Yeah. But what Trump has seen is that the institutions are the opponents of his movement. So he has to destroy that. And of course, you listen to Ruth Ben-Ghiat, that's what all fascists do.
Yeah.
Because the institutions are also what rein them in and hold them accountable.
The institutions of a society structure the existing relations of that society. That is how the society is. I'm 5'9" and I have so much weight and I have when I had hair, such color and so forth and so on. That's me. That's how I am embodied. The institutions are the body of the society. So naturally, if you want to change the society, you got to change its institutions. And it's necessary to have outsiders. Outsiders in the sense of people who are not committed to the institutions. Otherwise, nobody raises an objection to the institution because the other people live within the institution.
Well,
they make their peace with it.
Well, the two areas Trump wanted to take over were the Justice Department and the Defense Department. You know, he tried to insert Jeffrey Clark there. I mean, he couldn't. It was bad enough when he had Jeff Sessions and Bill Barr and Whitaker, but Whitaker was only, I think, acting AG, Attorney General. But he wanted to take over people who would effectively weaponize these institutions, destroy what they really stood for, and use them for his movement, so to speak. And the Defense Department, he goes around talking bad things about Mad Dog Mattis now, who he touted, and Esper and Mark Milley and what have you. But now we see that the Republicans are going along and trying to destroy these institutions. They're trying to destroy the FBI. They're trying to destroy the military, with Tommy Tuberville, who is for, that other thing, the anti-abortion movement, which is what the other thing that the Trump I don't want to call it machine that the Trump movement is built on. And we have that history that things changed a lot when the Republican Party decided to go in with the religious movement, the evangelical movement.
The Tuberville situation is very interesting. Tuberville has effectively decapitated the American military. There are 230 promotions to leading positions within the armed forces, all branches, that he's preventing from being appointed.
Commandant of the Marine Corps.
No commandant of the Marine Corps. There'll soon be no chief of staff of the general Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Right.
In fact, most of the chiefs have to be turned over within the next few months. So you have a situation where, on the one hand, the president is going around, going around saying that we have to challenge and stand up to the Russians, and we have long term, we have to be prepared to go to war with China, and you don't have an army with a leadership. Tuberville says that's not a danger to that foreign policy because the men, I'm not endangering the men who do the fighting. I'm talking about the higher ups. Now, I don't dispute the fact that if you would like to make the argument that Tuberville is an asshole who doesn't understand anything and can't think straight, I'm sure he's an idiot. But Tuberville's a man who calls himself coach. He was a football coach.
Right.
No football team has yet existed which allows the tight end to decide the strategy on the game. Only the coach decides the strategy of the game. No center decides how the team should be trained to carry out its plans. Only the defensive and offensive coaches decide how the teams should be trained and carry out that training and supervise that training. It's no more the case that the men in the field are not endangered if they don't have leadership than it would be the case that men in the field could go out and stand under an explosion and not think that they're going to be blown up. An army is a group of men and women who carry out the orders of their superiors, who make the plan. Right?
Well, yeah. And what we're seeing is that the institution of the Senate, in this case, is incapable of dealing with this radical type of departure from norms.
You've got a system that is incapable of running itself. That's what you're looking at, right?
Yeah, because no one ever envisioned that someone would be this stupid or this venal to do this. And so they're stuck with this stuff. Well, our Senate ideas of congeniality and the way we operate trump, if I can use that word, the dangers that Tuberville is posing to the United States military. What you really need is Schumer and McConnell to get together and say, enough is enough, Tommy. This blocking ain't going to work no more. We're going to put it on the floor and we'll see, you know. And you can vote your conscience and everybody else is going to vote against you. And we'll be done with this. You've obstructed enough.
But to the extent that they don't do that, to that extent, right, the capitalist system in the United States has managed to fall into a political situation in which the political situation can't help capitalism survive. It can't run itself this way.
Yeah. And we haven't even gotten into mentioning the Supreme Court and how that's been that type of
Well, they're just usurping all the legislative power.
Well, but it's more, I mean, there was a great op-ed in the New York Times this week by a judge, Posner, Michael Posner, not Richard, but Michael, about they can't even smell their own stench. You know, they've lost. They're so enmeshed in their own world that they've lost the ability to deal with their own radicalization.
You're fast coming. The only thing missing is a group of outsiders ready to tell the American people, get rid of this stuff, because the insiders have managed to make a system that doesn't work. It doesn't function. It can't lead itself. They can't rule. They don't rule. No. And that's what gives Trump his strength, because all of his opponents are prepared to wallow and at least he, who can't get out of wallowing anyway, says, well, I do know how to get out of it.
All except Chris Christie.
All except Chris Christie, yeah. All right, anyway, that's it for this week.
We'll see what happens next week. Have a good week.
You too. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.